This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome into episode 206 of Half Measures. I'm once again joined by my friend and co-host, Dan Whiting King. Kia ora, Dan. How are you?
Kia ora, Paul. I am doing great. And you know what makes it great is it's not the 1st of March today, but it has recently been the 1st of March. And you know what's great about the 1st of March, Paul? It's New Lego Day. And there's so many great new like Star Wars sets coming out. And I've been thinking about this quite a bit, that maybe I should just start measuring time and when new Lego releases happen, because it's such a joyous occasion. Like, there's new YouTube videos about these sets. You get to go into the store. You get to, you know, look at them. You get to, like, sample the new, particularly the new Star Wars wares. It's a great time to be a kidult.
I've gone into, like, an instant cold sweat. Why am I not across this? How am I not measuring time in this way? Because I thought the answer was going to be, you know, it's now the change of season. You know, we've now gone into autumn, but no, it's new Lego sets.
Well, so this, look, I'm derailing this podcast from the start, but there's some sets that you'll probably like, Paul. Like, they've got this new, like, kind of like mini series of fighters, where they've got like a sort of a mini scale Millennium Falcon. They've got the 10-5. They've got,
no, stop, just, oh my goodness, no,
they've got the 10-5.
I need, like, to go and see this.
They've got the corridor scene with
10-5.
Sorry, 10-4. They've got the...
Thank you.
Sorry. The 10-4 corridor scene with, like, Darth Vader and the General Antilles, and it's... Captain Antilles, sorry. It's, like, it's so good. There's so many great sets. It's
amazing. I did actually know that there were some new sets out there. There is a set I'm trying to purchase for my wife, but finding one in stock in New Zealand is exceptionally hard.
What's the set, Paul? I need to know.
Well, I probably shouldn't say, because there's a strong chance that she'll be listening to this podcast. But in fact, I've already revealed that I'm looking to buy a Lego. So,
can you text it to me then? Because kidding? it's important.
No, I already know she knows. Okay. It's the London red phone box.
Oh, then that's new out. That's good.
So it looks like a good set, but try and find it. My goodness,
I am really interested in. Like, a little while ago, like maybe a year ago, they re-released the old school, like, Knight's Castle, and that looks freaking awesome. And then they've also just released the new, like, medieval village. Like, you know, I'm really about that. I'm just about all the sets, but it's kind of that fine line with Lego. Like, where do you put it all? Like, you know, and you've either got to, like, put it up.
Where it doesn't get dust.
Exactly. No dust. I think you've got to have a rotation going where you, like, you put some up, you take it down, you put some up, you take it down. And I think if, you know, someone like yourself is highly organized, you keep the original box, you know, you pack it away accordingly, it probably works quite well. But I just find, just in general, it's just such a great, like, way to unwind. Like, I enjoy sitting there, like, on a Saturday afternoon, Sunday, making some Lego, chilling out. It's great.
My current set's on display here. The London bus, the 1960s Batmobile, and the Beatles Yellow Submarine and the James Bond Aston Martin. Those are my sets on display. The other sets that I'm real keen on is the retro 80s space, the original space sets, because that brings back childhood memories. Dan, I often wonder, because I listen, like you do, to a lot of podcasts, and some of my podcasts, like this one, go off the rail right at the start. I'm like, look, I'm here to listen to the politics. I'm here to listen to the football, whatever it is, and I'll start just scrubbing ahead 15 until I can hear that they're past all this nonsense. And so I think what we should do is start dropping in just the occasional random word in the opening 2-3 minutes for those people that scrub, so they're like, wow, what are they talking about? And then they might come back and realize that actually we're just trolling them.
I would imagine, though, like, just there must be a strong correlation of our, like, audience group and Lego. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Lego's having such, like, a, like, they've been having it for years, to be honest, and I don't think it's ever really gone away, but I feel like the Lego resurgence for adults is just so huge these days. And I think because there's such a connection between Lego and, you know, movies and television, it's, you know, we're cross-pollinating audiences.
We are indeed. We are indeed. Dan, I am going to take us back on track because I am the organised one, you said. So what have you been watching this week, please?
All right. I have got a couple of movies for you, apart from our joint watch. I've got one movie I really, really loved and one I'm not even sure why I'm bringing it to the pod. But you know what? It's my job to bring the good and the bad. So first movie, a 2023 movie on Prime Video called Joyride. Now, this is a real random... I actually saw it. I went overseas at Christmas time and I saw it on the sort of movies on the plane, but I never watched it for one reason or another. I saw it on Prime Video the other day and thought, you know what? I'm going to give this a go. So the basic sort of synopsis here is it follows four Asian American friends as they bond and discover the truth of what it means to know and love who you are while they travel through China in search of one of their birth mothers. This, Paul, is the equivalent of like a modern day American Pie type movie. Like I feel like it doesn't rate that highly, but I genuinely had half a dozen laugh out loud moments with this movie. Like, it was absolutely hilarious. It was such a feel good, like it was comedy. It was a little bit of like sort of serious drama, like, but you know, this is an R-rated movie. It's a lot of fun. So fantastic cast. So our main character, Ashley Park, who plays Audrey, she's basically heading over to China she's got a business deal. The business deal basically can't go ahead because obviously in China there's a lot of sort of strong cultural practices. There's lots of talk about family, and you know, to do business with someone you've got to know their family. She's adopted and basically goes on a search for her birth mother, and with her on this trip she has some of her best friends, and all her best friends are sort of from this quite different kind of life. Like, she's got one friend who's a famous actress in China, so well known, very well off. She's got another friend who's kind of her lifelong best friend who's an artist but kind of walked a bit of a different path to her. And then there's like a quirky cousin who's absolutely hilarious, played by Sabrina Wu, who's called Deadeye. And they just it's ridiculous. It's just a good feel good movie. Like, I honestly, I can't rate this movie high enough. I had a really good time watching it. I would recommend, like, if you haven't seen it but this sort of movie appeals to you, maybe stay away from the trailer. Like, I didn't watch the trailer beforehand, but I would imagine it's going to be the type of trailer that's probably going to ruin three or four of the jokes. But going into this with low expectations, laugh a minute.
Full disclosure, Dan, I was all excited when you said Joyride. I brought it up on IMDb. I was like, oh, yeah, I've seen this. And I've seen this post and I really want to watch it. And I was really excited to hear what you had to say about it because I thought it was the Joyride 2022 movie starring Olivia Colman. And this is something quite different. Ashley Park is in it and she is always good value. She's been in Only Murders in the Building. We saw her in Beef. She's done voices in Star Wars. She's a fun actress. I was just watching the trailer play as you were talking, Dan. It does look good. The ratings look pretty pretty reasonable as well. And I've not heard of the writer-director. So the flavour of this is comedy all out, or is there anything else within that?
There is a serious story amongst this. You know, where the writer has come from, she was one of the writers behind Crazy Rich Asians, which maybe kind of gives you, maybe you've seen that movie, a little bit of a flavour. So this is a serious story about kind of friendship and family and what that means. But it's more in the comedy sense than it's that. So it's, I guess for me, what I came out of this is there's a story with a bit of heart in there and some laughs along the way. Like, it rates, you know, kind of mediocre-ish, I think, on IMDb. Like, a 6.4 is not amazing, but it's not terrible either. So I think if you go into it with that expectation, I think you should have a pretty good time. Like, I've recommended this to a few people now, and And everyone who sort of watched it has said they really enjoyed it. So if you're looking for a good laugh, I don't think you can go past it.
Very cool. And traveling through China as well, just looking at the backdrop in that, it looks spectacular. And the poster, the same about the colour of that poster, it reminds me of another movie that you reviewed a while ago, just that sort of very neon type colour.
Is it the movie Quite Bottoms? Sort of draws you in. I feel like it might have sort of had a...
No, is it Kerry Mulligan? Why is it? I can see her face on the front. Or
it's not. It's not promising. This is,
could be here all day.
Yeah,
for this
that's right.
And, was it Promising?
I was
going to
say Promising. Yeah. That does have a similar.
Might have been
color.
That. Yeah,
nowhere near probably as dark as that. So look, it's a good comedy, a good classic Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. You'll have a good time. Some real funny moments. The next movie I've watched, also on Prime Video, I'm coming in a bit hot on this one, Paul. I don't really know why I watched it, but I have heard a lot of hype around it, and I don't know if this is really good hype or bad hype, but it's just been hyped up, and so this movie, and I think it was because it was sort of popular in America, and I think it had a bit of a delayed release, is called The Sound of Freedom, and so. I was very unsure about bringing this to the podcast because it's a pretty grim topic. And in terms of watching movies, I kind of wished I watched this movie and then Joyride as opposed to the other way around. But let me give you the synopsis and then we can kind of talk about this movie a little bit. And this is not normally a realm that I think Half Measures goes into, but you know what? I thought, it's a relatively popular movie. Let's talk about it. So basically, after rescuing a boy from ruthless child traffickers, a federal agent learns that the boy's sister is still captive and decides to embark on a dangerous mission to save her. With time running out, he quits his job and journeys deep into the Colombian jungle, putting his life on the line to free her from a fate worse than death. So, okay, first... You know, I was just talking before about Joyride, didn't watch a trailer, went in blind. I think if I'd watched a trailer for this, I probably wouldn't have watched it. So knowing that this is kind of a very grim topic about basically child trafficking, it stars, I'm not sure how we even say his last name, Jim Caviezel, who plays Tim Ballard. He's our FBI agent. He is... definitely the star of this movie. I would say 95% of the budget probably went to bringing him on board. The wider acting and storytelling is pretty challenging to watch here. So not only have you got a grim topic, it feels very kind of like B-grade. And I was unsure about bringing this to the pod because... on one hand, you've got a very serious topic, and I think they're trying to sort of bring light on the severity of this and what's going on around the world. And this is a true story of how an actual agent, you know, dedicated his life to saving this young girl. At the same time, I just didn't think it was a very good movie or it just didn't, I don't know what I'm looking for here, but it wasn't a very easy watch, and not even because of the subject matter, I don't think it was very well done, and it scores relatively high on IMDb, it's got a 7.7, which, you know, in the scale compared to Joyride, it's actually pretty high. I think what the story does do is it does leave you with that kind of yes, the world is a messed up place. There is a lot of very dark stuff that happens, and there needs to be greater kind of awareness and action around this stuff. But I just don't know whether this movie is the vehicle that truly kind of delivers this. So it was a bit of a weird one. I don't know whether I'd recommend it. I even feel a bit weird bringing it to the podcast. I don't think it was well acted at all, apart from by Jim. Everything else was very, C grade, I would say. I'm probably going to cop some flake for this, but yeah, not for me.
Fair enough, it's not for you. I don't think you should feel weird bringing it to the podcast. I mean, it's a movie that you say has had a lot of hype, and yeah, it's one of those genres and stories, you know, true story, that obviously is sometimes a hard watch, but sometimes those can be really rewarding. You and I have both had that with some of the true stories that have been hard to watch, but they've been really well done. I loved how you said at the start, I don't know how I ended up watching this. It's, you're kind of in my mind. I just imagine you've fallen asleep on the couch and you've just come to and you're like, what's this? Like, you know, like in the old days of terrestrial TV where somebody's just come on and you're just like, oh, I'll just watch this. But you obviously made a decision somewhere along the way. But it's interesting what you talk about the trailer, because there are a number of things that I've seen a trailer and thought, oh, no, not for me. And then I've ended up watching it. It's actually been really good. And of course, how many times, Dan, have we been caught the other way, watched a trailer and said, cannot wait to see this. This is going to be amazing. And then suddenly we were left with a Suicide Squad type situation where actually it turns out it wasn't. Interesting is what you say about the cast and all the budget going there. The one exception I would hope might be Bill Camp. He's an actor who has always delivered. I think we saw him in Queen's Gambit, Joker, Dark Waters. He's been in some of the older stuff as well back in the day, the Bourne movies. He's good value, but I have to admit, you're right, most of the other cast, looking across the board, I haven't seen him much. It's interesting you're saying that it wasn't sort of well made and well done, and yet it does score quite highly. What I find interesting is the meta score is only 36 out of 100, whereas when you were talking to me about Joyride, that was sitting at 74. So the score from the critics is much more highly rated towards Joyride than it is for Sound of Freedom. So it sounds like you're actually more in tune with the critics here. Maybe you're becoming more professional after all.
I think too, in the what happens, Paul, this, and this is regularly my searching pattern. Like I feel like back in the day, I might have like scrolled for, you know, 30 minutes through what's on every platform to see like, what am I going to watch?
That's right.
What happens now is I just go straight to what's new, and I just see whether there's anything that's kind of like either jumps out and I'm like, oh yeah, I've been looking forward to watching this, or that's new. And this one here, I remember about 6 months ago, there'd just been lots of media about it, and just thinking, oh, this is different. I might check it out and just see what all the fuss is about. But and look, I'm probably being a little bit harsh that it's a little bit C grade. I think the challenge is because it's, you know, it's largely set in Colombia, and I would imagine, like, you know, like I think, you know, like there's mass, you know, armies and gangs and all sorts of stuff, and I think there's moments that are okay, but there's just, it doesn't have the polish for the hype that I was kind of that surrounded this movie. I guess that was kind of my surprise. Like, if there'd been no hype about it, I probably wouldn't have given any second thought to it. But yeah, both of these are on Prime Video. I would probably go with Joyride over The Sound of Freedom, but depends what floats your boat. But that is me, Paul. What about you this week?
Okay, so two TV series for you. Both of them are Series 4. The first Series 4 is from Star Trek Voyager, and I will be quite brief on this because I've obviously talked about the previous three seasons, something I've been watching with my 10-year-old daughter, and that remains one of my favourite things to do. Will she still be interested the older she gets as we work our way through the final three seasons? I can only hope. A lot can happen in 3 years, as we're, you know, starting to find out already under our new government. So watch this space. What I love about this is it's old school TV. It's, you know, full 26 episodes. It's a really great watch. A lot of great stories. I've talked before about Kate Mulgrew as the captain, superb actress. You and I talked, and I forget why or when, and I presume it was on air, may not have been. We were talking about Orange is the New Black and how neither of us really got into it. And one of the reasons I really wanted to get into it is because Kate Mulgrew was in that series, and she's just a terrific actress, and sort of hard to find things sometimes that some of your favourites are always in. She's fantastic. They introduced in this season a new character to replace one of the departing characters from last season, a Borg character called Seven of Nine. And that decision was made at the time for the wrong reasons. I would say a lot of bad reasons, but fortunately they wrote that character really well and her personality really adds a lot of dynamics. There's more conflict in there because, you know, she's not human and Starfleet can be a bit nicey-nicey, and so she's like a cat amongst the pigeons, so that's been really good. And this fourth season, when I look back at the whole four seasons, which is now over 100 episodes, has produced some of the best episodes of the entire run that we've watched so far, and there's just a lot of good fun in it. And we also have Gimli from Lord of the Rings, John Rhys-Davies himself come in as well. So yeah, really enjoyable fourth season watch.
I think no matter what happens with your daughter, Paul, I think you've created a core memory, you know, like she's always going to say, no matter what, oh yeah, whether it was good or bad, my dad, I used to watch this with my dad, you know, and it's
that's right.
There's something cute about that. And I think, you know, when you think about the conversations that you have as an adult, and you know, the people that like really love Star Trek or know about Star Trek, she's going to be one of them. She's going to have that knowledge. It's like she's studied for an exam that she doesn't know is going to come one day around the lunch table, or, you know, who knows, maybe she'll take over the Half Measures podcast as the next era, the next generation.
Cool, Dan. I appreciate you saying that. And I this means something to me because this week, literally, I scrolling through the Instagram memes and all the rest of it, there was a picture, top half of the picture was the original series from 1960s, and the bottom half was Voyager, and the caption was, how's it going now? Voyager is as old today as the original series was when Voyager came out. So like when back in the day when I, you know, so I sat down and watched Star Trek, the original series with my dad, you know, he sort of introduced that to me when I was young and younger. And that's sort of like where I'm at now. And, but it's weird to think that Voyager today is as old as the original series was when I was a kid watching Voyager. It's just a bizarre sort of concept, but yeah, it has been a really enjoyable watch. There were a few things that didn't work. Some of the writing for about three or four episodes just felt like you could have easily adapted the script and said, oh, this could have been Next Generation. Like you could do a find and replace on the whole casting and just replace Janeway with Picard and so on. It would work. And sometimes I need the stories to be a bit more specific to these characters and this show and a bit less generic. But yeah, as always, I always say, oh, here's some episodes for you to give a go. If you did want to jump in for season four, have a look at Scorpion, Message in a Bottle, Living Witness, and The Omega Directive. It's top Star Trek if you want to give it a bit of a taste. The episode Scorpion, for example, I was looking on Empire Magazine's top 100 Star Trek episodes of all time, and Scorpion is the highest rated of all Voyager across seven seasons, so that could be a jumping in spot as well. It's just a lot of good fun. They really try some brave things. It is very much an Alien of the Week, Mission of the Week, Planet of the Week format, and I think that works well when you're watching with someone young. It sort of keeps the attention, so when a story wraps quickly, we're on to the next thing. But yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of great performances, and it is a rewatch I'm really enjoying. So yeah, that's season four. All seven seasons of Voyager are on Netflix. My second season four watch, Dan, will probably be even more up your street, I believe, and that is the fourth and final season of Ozark. And I've got to preface this, Dan, because obviously you've watched this, and so I think I need to say this is going to be a spoiler heavy conversation. And for anyone who has not watched it and is thinking they may, and I certainly recommend, as I know you do, that they do use the time codes and jump ahead to our watch of the week, because yeah, this is quite an incredible show. Right off the bat, the ratings are 8.5 out of 10 across the board for IMDb, high ratings across the critics. A financial advisor drags his family from Chicago to Missouri, where he must launder money to appease a drug boss. And we're into the fourth and final season, Dan. And this series as I'm sure you recall, was originally released as a part one and a part two with a big break in between. So watching it in one sitting as I did, the first thing I can say is didn't notice it one bit. It feels really cohesive. I think the way they started with, if you remember, the birds having the car crash, and then it just jumps back in time, and then by the time you get to the final episode of this, of the whole series, they catch up to that scene. That sort of really helped to bookend it and make it feel like one season. The tension, the stress, the drama are always the things I crave from these sorts of shows. The whole I have to watch the next episode when one ends is the feeling you have all the time. Absolutely brilliant, Dan.
It's funny because that car crash obviously is even emphasized even further with the split in the season, because you kind of not forget about it, but you obviously, happens at the start of the season. There was, I think, a 3 or 4 month wait for the second half of the season, so it kind of became even more of a distant memory. But I guess, you know, Paul, one of the things with this show is what I've always said to you is I feel like it's up there with a kind of a Breaking Bad, a Better Call Saul. Would you agree with that statement now that you've finished?
Yeah, I certainly would. I think I would say if you're there's something else, sort of like a, because you're absolutely right with Breaking Bad, like Narcos as well would be another one. Anything that sort of involves crime at a sort of a cartel, FBI.
Sopranos.
What's the word? Yeah, just that sort of, what was the Hanks, who does Hank work for in Breaking Bad? Yeah, that sort of thing. If you like that sort of thing, it's really got that vibe. I had a lot of high hopes about the ending because I remember at the time you likened it as one of the best endings of all time. And having witnessed that now, I can say I see what you mean. I like the ambiguity about, you know, Jonah taking the shot and the abruptness of that ending. And there's a smile on Marty Bird's face just before we go back to Jonah holding the gun. And I thought that was really well done. And it was directed by Jason Bateman, that final episode, who really is all over the series in front of and behind the cameras. So yeah, as final seasons go, this is up there. To bring balance down, I am going to say it, and this is definitely a huge spoiler, so, but to have Ruth Langmore go out in the final episode to a revenge kill from Navarro's sister, I didn't like that. And it's not because I wanted everyone to make it and live happily ever after. Quite the contrary, in fact. But there are two main reasons I can think of as to why. One, I felt like it was a waste of a character whose story I felt had potentially just taken on a whole new beginning. It could have been a spin-off all of its own. Because just like we talked about, how can you expand out the Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, where can you go next? That could have been a real avenue to follow the Ruth Langmore story. That's obviously gone there. And if they wanted to go, second thing, if they wanted to go with the shock of taking out a main character who's been there since, you know, season one, and yeah, Ruth Langmore was exactly that, I think that's a great way to go. I think a lot of the big shows do that sort of thing. It just felt wrong to me that the whole Bird family of, you know, the main four come through the whole thing. I feel like if they wanted the shock factor, they should have taken out one of the birds, preferably one of the parents. It would have left a real sort of, oh, you know, here's the price you pay when you try and launder money for a cartel. But instead we're left with a, hey, we did it, we survived, and oh, now the kids are also part of it. Oh no, also they have blood on their hands as well. And I just felt like they had a real opportunity to do it with Wendy with the car crash, because, you know, the three of them get out and she's still there. And it could have been like a, you know, you survive the madness of this risky business of laundering money, drugs, and everything that comes with cartel type stuff. And then all of a sudden you have a car crash and that's how you die. I mean, what are the chances of that? That would have been my, it's just left me with a feeling of just, I'm just so gutted.
I think you're right. Like, it would have been great for Ruth to carry on. And I think it would have been great for her to be kind of in that final scene, because she really has been such a surprise and delight character right from the first season, right? Like, just to become who she becomes is just, it's so powerful. And she's such a great actress. I think you're right about it being Wendy Bird. I think Wendy Bird almost gets a little bit painted with the Skylar White brush, where she like, Wendy is often a little bit annoying. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's often working against Marty. And for whatever reason, like, you know, Marty's no hero either. But I always feel like I always felt like I was kind of on Marty's side for trying to just hold it all together and hold the family together. And I think it, even though I don't know, like, I think you're right. If I had to choose someone, it would be Wendy. I also think there could have been some power in, like, it could have been one of the kids. Because one of the things I did enjoy with this series is I really love just, you know, when you, again, think about Ruth's evolution, but think about Jonah's evolution. Like, you know, literally just a young kid going to school all the way to sort of becoming mini Marty Bird, learning how to money launder, running his own books, running his own schemes. It's so good. I think that the thing that I really love the most about Ozark is just so many great characters. And, like, like, all the way from, you know, Helen, like, you know, the sort of who worked for the cartel, like, her fate in this was, that was such a shock. I love Wendy's brother. Like, there's just, the Snells, like, they're all case studies in their own right. Like, and they've all had fantastic story arcs. And I think it's, in a way, it's sort of admirable the way that they're like, no, this is Ozark. It's done. Like, this isn't a show where we're going to come back together. This isn't a show where we're going to do a spin-off. We're very clear that this is a 4-season show.
Yeah. And yeah, for sure it is. And I think you're right. Some of the characters you've gone through there, the Snells, all of Ruth's family, just some really great characters along the way. Just thinking about Ruth in terms of her delivery of lines with that, I don't even know what the accent, you know, that sort of that real twang, just a real, when she swears, it reminds me, like, thinking about Brian Cox as Logan Roy swearing, or Hong Chau as Diane in The Night Agent when she would swear. There's just some people that when they swear, they just say it so well. And Ruth Langmore, like, I would be watching this quite often on the train on my iPad, and I'd sort of just be laughing to myself, and I'd just be hitting the back button just watching her say the line again. It was just absolutely fantastic. But the mini Marty comment that you made about Jonah is just so good. He becomes this sort of he's just in training, he's got this whole laundering thing going on himself at this, such a young age. The story arc of his character was good. And on that note, I just think that across 4 seasons, Marty's character has been a huge focus throughout. Wendy, I said last time I reviewed season 3, I called it the Wendy Bird Show. She really ramped up in season 4. She's great again. You know, she goes through the whole mental institution. You know, she survives that. So we've got Marty, Wendy, and Jonah on this arc. But the only character for me is Charlotte, who doesn't ever quite get the same level of story treatment. And I think that's a real shame, because I think I remember saying to you around season 2-ish that she seemed to have accepted the journey that her family are on, moving from Chicago, and suddenly, you know, she was taking it in her stride a bit too easily, and they never really dived into her enough. I thought from a character perspective, it was just a bit of a waste.
Well, yeah, she kind of almost gets the Walking Dead treatment, like where the Elisa, mm-hmm. is that her name? Fear the Walking Dead, like where a lot of potential, Alyssa. could have taken on sort of more of a lead role. In fact, I'm surprised they didn't partner her and Jonah up more to kind of like run the mirror version of what Marty and Wendy do. So, yeah, I think you're right. That's a good shout. In fact, looking back at these episodes, I'd completely forgotten about Ruth's fate, so it's a good reminder of what happened there.
Yeah, oh, really, that's the shock moment, because everything's going fine. They've signed agreements, they've got witness protection and things going on and all kinds of things, and that's the moment, because Alicia, you got me thinking of the fear, Charlotte and Jonah agree to stay with Wendy and Maddie and not go with the crazy grandfather and all the rest of it, and it just hits you out of the blue. And yeah, I think in summary, Dan, just to sort of, because, you know, I've sort of been watching this in one go, I think, you know, overall, absolutely fantastic season. I think in order, I would, in terms of sort of best, I think season 3 was still top for me. It was, had a hectic pace. Wendy was badass, but we had lots of shock killings of characters. Then I'd go 4, which I've just talked about. Then I'd go 1. because it was the whole scene setting and the move from Chicago was quite exciting. And then two, because the other three are better. But overall, definite recommendation, a series that you twice, because I had a look, you twice had it in your top 10 list while it was airing live. And whilst I missed out on the live buzz, I have to say being able to watch it, binge it in one go has been really great. And, you know, it's 44 episodes of a very high quality story, very high quality performances. So if you haven't already, and, you know, like you say, Breaking Bad, Narcos, anything that involves that type of content, this has to be on your list, I think. And look, it's available on Netflix.
I agree. I watched this twice, you may recall, because I rewatched it in preparation for season four. So, and look, I actually think it's a show I could go back and watch again sometime, because I think it is that good. And I think you're right about the ranking. I think season two, I remember always being a little bit slower, but I think in the context of the fourth season, that season two is more of a, we're developing out some of these other storylines and building out some of these characters, but it's not as critical to the main story. Well, that's not quite true, but it's, I think your order is correct. I'm glad you've done it.
Me too. And I thank you for the recommendation. One nice scene, nice, if you like, was because of course so many people get killed off throughout the four seasons. Ruth has a scene where she climbs up onto the roof of her sort of Winnebago thing, whatever, and she can see, like, let's say the Force ghosts, but she imagines herself around with Wyatt, her cousin, with her brothers. Remember all the way back to season one, the dude with the beard and the guitar who was with the FBI agent, her dad, who was in prison, and that all of the cast, all those actors returned just to have a little cameo. And it was just a nice moment. And that was, again, another kick in the teeth that you have that nice moment and you sort of see her leaving that behind and going off to be good, to be taken out. It was a real, I mean, it's got me talking about it. So I guess they've done their job, but yeah. Great TV.
Very good shout. And yeah, it's been a journey, but congratulations. And yeah, I think this is a fantastic TV show. Definitely check it out on Netflix if you haven't. And we haven't just spoiled the entire ending for you.
Correct. Yeah, I really hope you have used those time codes. And jumping in right now, Dan, for Watch of the Week.
Indeed. Each week, Paul and I take turns choosing different movies. Wait, actually, that's not it. That's our peak performance. I'm out of sorts. I'm out of time. Right.
You're all over the place.
Let's start that again. So our peak performance, God, I'm still saying it.
Wow.
I'm glitched.
How did you get this job?
I don't know. Okay, let's try that again. Watch of the Week. So if you'd like to find out what our Watch of the Week is, then you should come and join our Discord channel where we announce our Watch of the Week each week. We normally sort of try to list them sort of three in advance. This week, Paul, we are reviewing season four of True Detective Night County.
Yes, indeed. Night Country. And we talked about Fargo last week and used the word season. And again, just to reiterate, the word series is possibly even better. It is a series because it is, again, a completely separate story to the others. This one involves a very different scenario if you've watched the first three seasons of True Detective. I have not. I haven't actually checked in with you, Dan, even talk about Half Measures. I haven't even checked in. I only watched the first season.
I've seen season one, season two. I don't think I've seen season three. So, yeah. There you go. You don't need to watch the other ones. This does have some connection to season one, but not enough that requires you to definitely have seen the first season or series.
Yeah. So this one is set in Alaska and is pretty much kicks off around that time of year where the sun sets, and once the sun sets, it stays set for a period, I think, of 14 days, 15 days. And so the entire series is at night, hence Night Country. And in that respect, it made it a very different TV show to watch because the sun never came up. And it reminded me of the opposite of the Al Pacino, Robin Williams movie in Alaska, where it was at the other end of the season where the sun rose and never set, and so then they never actually had any darkness. I mean, what a unique place to live, where certain times of the year you're going to have days and days of light with no night and days and days of night with no day. That in itself feels almost like something as a human being would be just worth experiencing.
Indeed. So the basic sort of premise here is, so first of all, it stars Jodie Foster and Kelly Reyes. As Paul said, it takes place in Alaska. It follows the investigation into the sudden disappearance of a team of 8 men from a research station. And I think you're right, like, this does have a very unique feel about it because the whole thing is at night. I feel like it's been a long time since I've seen Jodie Foster in action. I feel like growing up, she was everywhere. She's been in so many great TV shows. We're big raving fans of Silence of the Lambs, obviously been Taxi Driver, all sorts of stuff. And so great to see her on the small screen. I think great cast. I really enjoyed this show. Only 6 episodes, so relatively easy watch. I think overall really enjoyed it, maybe apart from sort of the final episode and kind of the conclusion of kind of where it all wrapped up. But I enjoyed within the 6 episodes, you know, because they're good chunky episodes. They're sort of in almost an hour, trying to sort of like understand, is this a crime show? Is it a supernatural thriller? What sort of else is going on within the town? Lots of interesting characters, obviously just sort of the intensity of living in sort of snowstorms and having polar bears walk around and a lot of kind of cultural stuff happening within the show. And so overall, I think I really liked it, but I don't know if I loved how it ended. How did you feel about this one?
Yeah, it's interesting because it was, for me, it was a really great setup. Like, I felt like that opening really grabbed my attention, and the manner in which the events unfolded, to be spoiler light, I guess, I had a real curiosity genuinely around what was going on. It also had that creepy feel. Mm. I thought the first sort of two and a half episodes were absolutely superb. I mean, we got, as you said, with Jodie Foster, standout performances. Quite probably my favourite actress of all time, I think, if I was to reflect on that, Jodie Foster. So as you say, it was so good to see her. I thought Carly Rice as the other lead, that was only her third ever on-screen performance as Navarro, and I thought she was really, really strong in that. So I really enjoyed her in this as well. And then you throw in a support cast that includes, you know, Fiona Shaw from Killing Eve. Beautiful. And Andor and other things, and John Hawkes from Deadwood and Eastbound and Down. And this is really set up superbly, but my but is that it felt like a long 6 episodes to me, and that can't be good, because I feel like I can say that with 8 or 10 episodes, but 6, this story was worthy of 6, and I just found it didn't do enough in the middle to really advance any of the story. And I don't know, we were talking before about, because it's so dark in Alaska, because it's in this period of 14 days, that maybe it just felt, or maybe I was just tired in the evenings. I don't know, it just felt like a long, bleak, miserable winter. And as an audience member, I found it a bit slow at times. And I often quite like slow shows, as you know, but there were just lots of parts I felt were unnecessary. And I have to say, I needed, as you said, the final episode, I needed that sort of the explanation as to how these guys ended up like they did to have been explained a bit more. I thought the ending was poor.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I think the intentional darkness, the fatigue of the snow, the how hard it is to get around, how cold everyone kind of looks, like, kind of, I think, worked for the show almost as like another kind of driver for lots of these characters. Like, you can't help but sort of, like, no wonder everyone's kind of a bit depressed and a bit dark. Like, the environment isn't good. And I think for the first 4 episodes, I was all in on this. And, you know, I kind of loved kind of that, like, this, that is the supernatural, is it not? I really loved the intro music by Billie Eilish, Bury a Friend. Like, I thought that was a really great sort of like get you in,
yes,
the mood
very good,
and zone of this TV show. I just I just feel, yeah, I think you're right. Like, episodes 5, it's, you could sort of start to sort of like, it was kind of running out of juice in the tank, and the bits that were more interesting than the actual murder for me were actually the people in the town. Like, I was more interested in the dynamic between, you know, Jodie Foster's, Liz Danvers' character, her boyfriend, her relationship with John Hawkes' Hank Pryor, his relationship with his son. Yes. Why is Fiona Shaw's character kind of a bit kooky and living out in the snow? That was the better story to me than these 8 researchers that had kind of gone missing. And so
yeah,
it made it, like, I wasn't driven by the murder. I was more driven by the interesting people in the town.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. I think the B plot, if you like, had a lot more going for it and was a lot more easy to follow as well. Like, I mean, I just didn't get some of the stuff. Like, the dude at the end with the beard who was at the start, was starting to look like he was being electrocuted, and then he was like, oh, she's awake. And then we see him at the end, and he's saying that same thing, but he's looking at Navarro. That played games with my mind, and I struggled to connect it all together. And I think maybe that's part of my problem, because I just didn't actually know what was going on. And this, you know, this was not Tenet. This was not Dark or something that was that complex. I should have been able to stay with it a little bit easier. But I do have a question for you, Dan. Oh, do you want to comment on
that? Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think what this is a symptom of True Detective overall, because season 1, I kind of came in kind of expecting this great kind of cop crime thriller, particularly with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, and it often kind of went in a bit of a different pathway, a lot more kind of like psychological thriller, supernatural. And I think each season of True Detective has kind of left me with this, like, it's a little bit like, you know, when we watched Dark, like, it's a little bit too big brain for me. Like, I needed a bit more paint by numbers. Yeah. And it's definitely been like well, that came out in, what, 2014. And, you know, they've got some light connections from season 1 and season 4. Like there's no way I was going back to check on this. Yeah, like the symbol that that gets drawn in the ice, and there's a connection back to the main killer in season 1. So, but I don't know that through being a smart person. I just know that through internet information. So I think just, like, I think, you know, like, if I compare, like, because I think it's interesting reviewing Fargo and True Detective in the same breath, and it's almost like Fargo is so much easier to understand and kind of have a good time. This just requires a bit more energy and brain power. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to chuck an episode on. Like, if you, I don't know, you can't play Animal Crossing and watch True Detective, I guess.
Correct. And if you are going to watch 2 shows of an evening, put True Detective on first while you're sharper. Because if you've got any hint of tiredness going on, you're not going to cope. And your comments actually sort of lean quite nicely into the question I was going to pose to you, Dan, which is, because you used a number of words there. You talked about psychological thriller, crime, and supernatural. And the descriptors, which, you know, I should say, because I know I rely heavily on IMDb and it is not the Bible of movies, but at the end of the day, it also is crime, drama, mystery. I think those are fair descriptors, but do you think that the combo of cop drama and supernatural is a good combo? Because I don't. And for me, I feel like, I thought I was cooking up a tin of baked beans, and then it tasted like beans, but then I bite into one of those, you know, those little sausages that you get, and actually this isn't a tin of beans. It's actually one of those white trash tin of beans that I love that have the little sausages in it. But sometimes I just want the beans without the sausage, and
this is going off the rails.
It is. And that's not what I've got. And maybe I need to pay more attention to what was in the tin before I opened it. But it's like, I like both those things, but I thought it was just baked beans. I thought this was just detective, you know, True Detective. I thought this was crime drama. And leaning into supernatural, it means it would be like watching Line of Duty, and at the end of it, Hastings was actually an alien or something. It just wouldn't work for me.
Yeah, I think it almost would have been better as a standalone police show without the supernatural element. Because I think that supernatural element is kind of something I think was just kind of echoed a bit throughout True Detective from memory. I couldn't tell you for season 2 and 3, but I definitely for 1. It almost would have been more interesting as this is season 1 of a whole different thing. Because I think I'm with you. Like, I think if you're going to go down the supernatural path, like, you've either got to lean into it pretty hard and kind of either give some answers or go deep, or you stay out of it. And I feel like they kind of danced around it a little bit here, and it almost had a bit of a Scooby-Doo feel to it, in the sense of, like, you know, we're one step away from pulling the mask off the caretaker of the research facility.
Correct. And he would have got away with it if it wasn't for you.
Yeah, exactly. But I just go back to, I was so fascinated by Jodie Foster and Carly Reese's character, that, like, they were enough to kind of keep me interested, and they're enough that I had a good time watching it. It's a shame that this hasn't kind of ended in this was a banger. This is a great contender for top shows of 24. Like, I could get an honourable mention still, but I think there's a lot of good TV coming out this year, and I don't think it will last long on that list.
No, and after such a strong start as well, like, it really, the first few really got me going, with those 8 men on the research station and the way that their bodies were contorted, really, that really got me interested into what had happened here. And it just, I think, based on ratings, it looks like it appeals to a number of people. It seems to be the lower rated season of the 4, but I'd be really keen to hear what anyone else has to say about this series. If you're in New Zealand, it's available to watch on Neon.
Interesting too, we're actually going to get the same director for season 5, I believe. So interesting to see where things go.
So yeah, so that is our watch of the week. And next week, as I tried to say last week, but this time I've got my lines right, next week our watch of the week will be Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is available on Netflix. And as Dan said, you can see our schedule ahead for the next 3 weeks on Discord by clicking on the link. What's your pick of the week, Dan?
Just before you do, just so there's no confusion, this is, if you're watching a movie about blue people on a planet called Pandora, you're watching the wrong Avatar. Correct. Keep that in mind.
Just like Joyride is not a movie with Olivia Colman. Well, it is, but it's not the one we're talking about.
That's right. And ironically, that is my pick of the week this week. So I think, just a surprise and delight, like I was saying, I generally had some good belly laughs, and every now and again in these dark days, that is what you need. So an easy one for me. How about you?
For me, I would be going with the final season of Ozark. It was a real good watch, a real good ending. And, you know, 4 seasons is really starting to appeal to me. You know, I'm now diving into the 4th season of Succession, and it's just like, it's a good amount of episodes to really do something more than a miniseries. And season 4 of Ozark is a strong finish to a top-tier TV show. So, yeah, that's me.
All right. Shall I take us over to the news desk? All right. So first, a little bit of sad news. So Richard Lewis, a comedian most probably recently known for Curb Your Enthusiasm, has passed away at the age of 76, which is very sad. There's lots of great clips out at the moment with him and Larry David, both in Curb and just generally together, and they just seem like they had a truly wonderful friendship.
Yeah, really funny stand-up guy, and he is in the final season of Curb as well, so he managed to make it through for that final season, which I think he would have been pleased about for sure.
All right, what else have we got here? So looks like Disney is going to release a second wave of Marvel and Star Wars steelbooks, including Andor and Moon Knight. And so what I thought was interesting about this, Paul, is, you know, we talk a little bit here on the pod about having some physical media. I feel like Andor might be one of those ones that needs to be owned on physical media. I feel like I need it in the archives just in case.
I saw the post on Instagram, I think it was, of Obi-Wan and Andor. The steel boxes, it said, attention all physical media fans. And it would look nice on the shelf, wouldn't it?
I think it would be, like, I feel like I need to do some backtracking and actually make sure, like, I've got all the Blu-ray movies of the prequels and the original trilogy, but I don't have anything else. I feel like I've slipped, I've failed this city. I'm going to need to make sure it's always available. What else have we got here? So, fans of Community, which I know you are, Paul. Joe McHale has recently come out, and I know there's talk about this all the time, that, but he says the Community movie will shoot in 2024. So fear not for fans of Community.
What's funny is, Dana, I watched like the first, I think, 3.5-4 seasons. And I can't remember if we talked about this on air or off air again, but it just got a bit samey. And the appeal just didn't quite hit. And so I gave up. But a movie could be funny. But I guess I probably need to know how it all finishes.
Well, you know, like, you know my feelings on Community. Like, there's something wrong with me, obviously, because I've never been able to get into this TV show. And I feel like it should be right up my alley. Like, you know, it's got everything, which would kind of appeal to me. But I've tried a few times and it's just not for me. Which is sad. We have a release date for House of the Dragon Season 2. That will be coming this summer, which is June 2024. So that means one great thing for me is it means I'm going to get to rewatch House of the Dragon Season 1 and then can't wait to get into Season 2. I feel like it has been a long time coming.
It's also winter for us as well, and I feel like that might be even better as well because it's darker and it's colder and, you know, as opposed to watching it in summer when the temptation for you to go swimming in the ocean will not be there.
That's right. And, you know, as my father-in-law says, I love a good swords and sandals drama, so can't wait. And, look, June's going to be a bumper, as I was saying. You know, we've got Boys Season 4. I think there's It's a couple of other shows that are coming out in June as well that have now just blinked on me, but it's all right. This is half measures. We are also getting Bonjour, it's Daryl Dixon in France, Season 2, which is also arriving in summer 24, which, again, presuming that will probably be a June-ish release date. I quite enjoyed Bonjour, I'm Daryl Dixon in France, so looking forward to that second season. Before then, we would have reviewed the Ricky and Mickey, Rick and Michonne.
Is that what we're calling it now?
The Ricky and Mickey show, which will be good too. So we'll be hopefully up to date on all things Walking Dead. So we'll be bringing that to the pod sometime soon. We also have some news about the Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power. Through a new deal with Amazon, they've already begun working on season 3 of that show, which I think is great because I know I enjoyed season 1. From memory, you might have had some mixed experiences, but the fact that they're kind of committing to a good 3 or 4 seasons already is very positive. That's all I've got, Paul.
I did enjoy that season, and I feel like
you didn't.
I needed more. I feel like I needed more, and I feel like, you know how I've just talked about it was great watching Ozark in 4 seasons in one go. I felt like if there's going to be 4 seasons of Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, maybe I need to watch that in one go. I felt like it just didn't move along quickly enough for me. That was my takeaway memory at this point. But who knows what I said years ago in that podcast.
And we're never going to check, are we? You know, who knows? I think it's only a matter of time before we start redoing peak performances. I think this will be a show that I definitely need to rewatch before the next season, just to kind of like re-immerse myself into this world. So that is the news for me, Paul. Any news on your side?
No news for me this week, Dan. So I will jump straight to mailbag. And just one quick thing in the mailbag is we had the official Mr. and Mrs. Smith Instagram account share our review of the series, which is pretty cool. It's not often you get the official accounts actually do that. So that was pretty cool. Another thing I just wanted to just quickly bring up was we recently shared on our social media our favorite podcast, because you and I always pick our favorite podcasts each year, and I know not all of our listeners are on social media, so just to share, each of us gave our top five podcasts that we listened to. We weren't allowed to choose half measures, of course, because that would just have been unfair. Dan, your five podcasts, you had the Sacred Symbols podcast, PlayStation podcast, Constellation, made by the same guy, as I understand, right. The Last Stand Media crew, different permutations to talk about anything and everything outside of gaming. New Heights, Jason Kelce from Philadelphia Eagles and Travis Kelce from the Chiefs team up behind the mics. And Real Ones with John Bernthal, one of our favorite actors, gives the mic to some of the most interesting people living on the front lines with some of the most interesting times, interesting issues of our time. And your final one was Past Weekend with Theo Van, about what happened on the past weekend and sometimes in the days in between. And my five were The Working Group, a New Zealand political podcast, Gone by Lunchtime, another New Zealand politics podcast, Mission Log podcast, which we talked about a lot on the pod, breaking down every episode of Star Trek, Ellis James and John Robbins, twice weekly doses of big laughs and top quality content from the UK, and finally, of course, Time Traveling Tink. Each week, hosts Trisha and Paddy reviewing every episode of Doctor Who, every story right from the very beginning. So there's 10 podcasts that we recommend for you to check out. I thought I'd chuck it in the mailbag this week, since I'm just aware that not everyone sees all of our posts because not everyone's online. Now, peak performance, Dan, last week was Michael J. Fox, and we had five nominations this week. First, we had Rob went with Doc Hollywood. We had Jason choose The Frighteners, classic Kiwi movie right there. Diana went with Back to the Future. Samara went with an honourable mention of Homeward Bound, and peak performance was Back to the Future. Paddy, 3-2-1 of The Good Wife, Casualties of War, and peak performance, like you, Dan, was Back to the Future 2. I must say, I've never seen Doc Hollywood, and more surprisingly, I haven't seen Casualties of War, which was in that 3-2-1 80s movie with Sean Penn, John C. Reilly, Ving Rhames, and Michael J. Fox. How did I miss the memo on this one?
I've never seen them either, so you are not alone.
Okay.
But there's a lot I haven't seen, so that shouldn't be a measure for anything.
It's an old one, but it still checks out by the side of it, sound of it. You know how you were saying before how you go and you choose movies, sometimes you'll go to the What's New section. Mm. What I'd like is a section that's What's Old. Mm. Just show me, like, what's old, and I reckon I could find some things in that lolly jar.
What we probably need is the Elon Musk Neuralink brain tap-in that's like, what's good that I've never seen?
That's what we need.
You know, and it's like, actually, all right, Dan, you need to watch Event Horizon and Apollo 13 and something else that's...
Sully.
It's too much. Can't do it.
It's too much.
It's too much. Wait. It's too much. But I need those recommendations. Like, I need it to, like, look through my archives and know what I've seen. Or maybe it's like, this memory's fading from your brain. You should probably rewatch this movie. That would be quite good.
Wow. I'd hate to think what the chip would say about my brain if it was fading from my brain. I really would. I will take us into our peak performance, which is the one where Dan and I take turns every week to look back at the career of someone from the movie or TV industry and try and pick out what we think is their best performance to date. And this week, Dan, we're looking at the career of Jennifer Jason Leigh.
We are indeed. And this is probably a little bit of recency bias, actually, just from watching Fargo. And I was just so impressed with Jennifer Jason Leigh in Fargo. Like, it reminded me of her range as an actress. And I think for my honourable mention, I'm going to give it to her for her role in Fargo, purely because I just absolutely just loved her. As you know, we sort of talked about her as the Logan Roy of the family, and I think she just there's something about her role as Lorraine Lyon that kind of has an evilness but a kindness to it at the same time, and she's just a complete business mogul, and I think she just completely smashed out that role. So, honourable mention. Peak performance for me, Paul, I'm going back to 2015. I'm going to The Hateful Eight. And I think this is just another example for me of just such a wide sort of breadth of characters, like, you know, to play the rough and tumble Daisy Domagoo, and just, you know, black eyes, straight talking, living at large with cowboys and a blizzard and a murder mystery. Just such a classic role for her. And just I almost can't even compare these two characters. They've got to be different people to me. So there you go. Fargo season, what's that, season five. And yep. The Hateful Eight in 2015. How about yourself?
Great choices, Dan. I'm really, really pleased that you chose The Hateful Eight, because it didn't quite make my honourable mention and I feel like it deserved it, because just as a brief aside, I feel like when I look back at the movies that Quentin Tarantino has written and directed, I feel like The Hateful Eight, when I talk to other people, is probably the one which most people haven't seen out of all of his stuff. Like, if you could talk to someone about a lot of his stuff, a lot of people seem to have just didn't get on their radar, and I thought it was very good, and I thought she was top drawer in that, so great pick. My honourable mention, however, I have gone with an oldie but a goodie, a single white female, and I was a teenager when I watched this, you know, all the way back in 1992, and in fact, I'm not even sure I've watched it since then, but the performance has stuck with me, and because she's terrifying in this, she's proper psycho, and really taking the stalking and the obsession and all the bad traits that come with that to the absolute limit. And I thought that both herself, you know, and Bridget Fonda were really good in this, and opposite each other, you could feel that fear and intimidation that you know that when she's in the room, to the point where you're like, okay, she's got a few screws loose here. And I liken that feeling of every time she walked into the room to being like what it must be like if you were to imagine being in the room with what was his name? Joaquin Phoenix's character in The Joker, Arthur Fleck, you know, just like a loose unit, or Robert De Niro when he was Max Cady in Cape Fear. Just someone who walks in the room and straight away you're aware, okay, not someone you want to be in the room with. And I thought she was just really, really good. So yeah, that would be my honorable mention. My peak performance would actually be in the 2017 series Atypical as Elsa Gardner. And this is a show, Atypical, which I absolutely love. And it's primarily about Sam, who is, you know, the sort of the main character who's on the autism spectrum, and he is fantastic, and that's another conversation, but it is just as much about the family who live with him. And Jennifer Jason Leigh as the mum is just, again, so brilliant to watch. She goes on an incredibly complex character arc in her relationship, not only with her son, but also her daughter, her husband. Each of the characters is such a palpable, complex, tense relationship, and I just feel she really gives her best performance across these four seasons. And it's a real treat because you get 38 episodes of her, and I think that's another reason it gets my peak performance, because, you know, forgive the cliche, but you get to go on such a journey with her across 30 episodes, that her life, just as we were talking before about, you know, enjoying B stories, her life becomes a really big B story next to the A story, but it's on a par in terms of the enjoyment value of what you're watching. So yeah, single white female and Atypical for me, Dan.
Isn't it funny? You've really, I feel like growing up, like the definition, like single white female was so just used, and like, you know, if anyone was a little bit crazy, like, oh, you're going single white female, you know, like, and it's,
that's
it's
right.
Such an old classic movie, probably a very offensive statement to say these days. Erase that from the Half Measures archives. Probably shouldn't be said.
It is erased.
Yeah, and Atypical, that's a great shout. That is a fantastic TV show. And I think, yeah, another amazing role for her. So, yeah, fantastic. Great to talk about Jennifer Jason Leigh. I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
Indeed. Thanks as always for listening. Don't forget, we do love questions. do get in touch on our social media. And I know one listener out there who I won't name, but I have heard that you're putting together a top 10 list of Western movies. We'd love to hear what that list looks like.
Oh, very good. Very good. Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Whiting King, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer of the show, help keep the lights on here at Half Measures, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.